Welcome back, everybody. I am joined by two co-hosts today. I've got Corey.
Hi.
And for the first time ever, we have another Lisa.
Hello.
Yes, this is my other little Lisa.
Another Lisa Lynn.
Yes. It's, the world is small. I attract tiny Lisas.
It's true.
So we're going to be talking about the card game job, which came out the same day as all the other episodes in this half of the season. It was directed by Francis Della Torre and written by Mark Franklin Williams and Matthew Okamura. So in this one, to take down a self-called vulture capitalist, the team have to win a card game.
Yeah.
In cosplay. And it's amazing. It's amazing.
It's perfect.
We're going to zoom through the beginning. It opens up. We have a young girl who gets ill in the park. But the young girl, played by Jenna Devlin, Dean Devlin's daughter. It's awesome. And her dad comes to the Leverage team and tells them that he's unable to get her medication that she needs because the prices have been jacked way up. And we find out that the pharmaceutical company that makes the drug that could cure what she has doesn't make the cure, because you only use a cure once, as Sophie says. Whereas if you have to keep buying something to stay alive, you're going to do that. And the dad is at the end of his rope. So that pharmaceutical company got bought out by a company called Corticorp. It was like a tongue twister even for Harry, which is owned by a guy named Cordozar, and which is a weird name.
So weird.
A weird name. And he, oh God.
Cordozar, I thought was an over-the-top character until I remembered that Martin Shkreli exists on this planet.
So they kind of dialed him back, actually.
They did, in fact, dial back. If you think about the smarminess level of Martin Shkreli, and you dial that back to just a cartoon comic book villain smarminess level, that's this guy.
Yeah.
Parker says of him, he looks like if a weasel and a snake had a baby and then dipped it in slime.
I love it. He's the word. You were at the end, you were like, I just hate his face. Hate his face. And then, like, Lisa hasn't watched a lot of episodes, so we're also getting a perspective of someone who's not always a viewer. You do listen to some of the, you listen to the podcast, but
And I've seen the Korean version.
Yes, you've watched the Korean version with me. But I was like, no, almost every single villain, the whole time you're like, you're the worst person. Like, the guy who plays Fletcher in the first, I'm just like, your face.
I do feel like this guy has a smirk that is like Zuckerberg-esque.
See, I would say more Patrick Bateman.
In a way that does make me specifically, NSA guy listening, I'm not saying I want to punch Mark Zuckerberg in the face.
Unless.
But this man's face does have a special kind of smug millionaire rich white boy who screws people over thing to it that is like kind of the essence of the Leverage villain. He's sort of like a Leverage villain in that way.
Yes. He's been distilled. He's like so pure. Yes. We see them go in to infiltrate because they're going to sell him the Brooklyn Bridge. And Brianna gets to go in and pretend to be Billy Potts, which is our Doctor Who reference of the day. Bill Potts was one of Capaldi's companions.
That sounded familiar.
Yeah. And
also a black queer character. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Who gets killed off.
Of course.
Of course. I won't say that's Brianna, don't worry.
No, never.
No. So she
killed them. Yo, not really.
John Rogers and Chris Downey and Dean Devlin would never. Would never.
Literally 3/4 of my notes for this episode are I would die for Brianna.
Lisa was like, is that like we I paused for a second. She's like, wait, is that Brianna? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Because she hasn't seen her. She's only heard us gush about her. And the whole time she's just like, oh, she's so cute.
Just like everything she does is perfect, actually.
All her little faces.
Her comedic timing is perfect.
Her denim duster. Like everything is just amazing. The only qualm that I have with Brianna in this episode is that she wore the same outfit for both times that she was at Quarter Corp. And that's not her fault. And also they still haven't gotten her makeup right. And it is painful to me. So I guess that's two
cover is probably the lack of black makeup artists in Hollywood, yes. Especially during COVID, not Brianna or the actress's fault.
No,
definitely not.
My only qualms are things that she had no control about.
She is protection itself. Yes.
Truly. Mm-hmm. Truly.
I want her in everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the live event last night where they're kind of Zoom call, and she was like at her own home and she had her hair like parted in the middle, but it like went up. And then she like had her she had done her own makeup and it was flawless. And I was like, this whole cast is so pretty, because like Aldis Hodge had this like hipster hat on.
Yes, it was very good. Everyone was very good. Parker, Beth's makeup as Beth is so completely different that it's like difficult to read her as Parker when she's being herself, which is like amazing. She just slips into that character so well. But yes, mm-hmm. also the entire cast just like talked about how great Brianna was the entire time, and that was
they did. Well, like it took them like 15 minutes to get to her because I was like, because they were, you know, talking about like getting back into the characters and like and the former seasons. There wasn't anything that was really relevant, and they finally like asked her a question, and like internet went out, and I was like, come back, Brianna. But then they were just like talking about it. And there have been several other interviews since the new season drops on, or the new half of the season drops on Friday. But yeah, every person's just like, oh, let me talk about how awesome Brianna is. I was listening to Christian Kane on the very distinctive After Leverage episode podcast, whatever. And he was just gushing about her. Like, just, they love her. It's so nice.
And
I like Noah Wiley too, I guess.
I'm under thrilled that they have chosen to drop the next half of the new season of Leverage the same day as the season finale of Ted Lasso.
See, I'm not caught up, so. But I did start watching it. I'm a season and a half in when I was zero.
I'm unthrilled.
I don't have Apple.
Yes, I'm unthrilled partly for myself and partly because like the entire internet is going to watch the season finale of Ted Lasso.
I know.
Right? And it just it just seems dumb. Like drop it on Saturday, you know?
Yeah.
When we're all tweet emotionally hungover and need a high.
Yeah. Oh well.
Anyway.
Darn you. Hey, where were we? Brianna's perfect. While she's searching Corticorp or Cordozars. But and also like the way you have to say that name, Cordozar. It just sounds horrible. Cordozar.
I feel like Elliot pronounces it differently than everyone else.
Yeah. He sounds Cordozar.
He sounds like a character in a fantasy card game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Like he sounds like the villain in a fantasy novel.
Yeah.
And like an old
Count Cordozar.
Yeah. He does.
And he looks like Count Olaf from Series of Unfortunate Events. Like, but with that guy's face. I cannot get that out of my head now. The really long spindly arms and legs. Okay. Speaking of a fantasy card game, While Brianna is searching his office, she finds this, because he has trophies. He has certificates and diplomas, but also like deeds to the companies that he's bought, because he likes to show them off like a big game hunter. And she sees a picture that she freaks out about because it's a castle, and Parker gets excited because she's had to take the poor assistant away and make her watch like harassment videos as if she's from HR.
It's kind of terrible.
Like, so bad.
I feel really bad for this girl who has spent 8 hours watching HR sexual harassment videos and she doesn't know why.
She's going to be paranoid about it for the rest of her life.
Yes.
Like, she's going to question every interaction she ever has with a colleague.
She's going to quit.
She should quit.
She
works for an evil mastermind.
Well, sure. Okay. All right. Then from that angle, how do we know that she's a good person? If she's working for this guy. He's not even trying to hide the fact that he's trash.
No, he is like straight up super proud of the fact that he's a terrible human being. He smirks about it a lot, and every time he does, like a muscle in my eye twitches.
Yeah. He would be insufferable in any universe, but do you think if he didn't have his little henchman, Carter, he would be as bad? Because Carter is constantly there to be his fluffer, just at all times.
So the guy, Carter, is this guy that he met in college, right? Who is an actual mathematical genius who sets up algorithms to figure things out. But also, I can't tell, I'm on the fence about this as a casting choice, right? Because, Carter is not white.
And his name is Carter LaGrange.
He's not white. And I am for like letting, obviously like letting POC actors play non-perfect, you know, sort of non-saintly characters. But this character is like so like sniveling and bootlicking to this white dude who's like allowed him access into his evil fortress of evil, that it like, and there's a part where when you very first meet the character of Carter, someone has called in sick, that or the person that Parker has like trapped watching HR videos is not at work, and Cordoza's like, I need my latte, and Carter says like, I'll do anything, believe me, it's not beneath me. Right. And there's this like very weird kind of,
because he says nothing's beneath you.
Nothing.
Like, yes. He literally says it, the quiet part, out loud. He's like, yeah, I know, you'll do anything. And I'm like, why aren't you writing an algorithm? Like, why are you just, it's like a puppy?
It's
why
a gross like power dynamic. Yeah. It's more uncomfortable, I think, because it's a person of color in this. And like, that's the choice that was, I mean, by casting that actor, it's, you know, you've got this like very sniveling, like, I'll do anything for you. Let me get your latte. Let me, you know, so it's a little weird. But I do think that like the way that Cordoza treats this guy who basically made him, right, by like writing algorithms to find companies that he can easily kind of get for under market value and then take apart for parts, is part of like what allows you to immediately see that character is just a trash fire human being.
Yeah.
So it is like a very quick fire, like, oh, this is the totality of who this character is.
And I love John Rogers has this thing that he always says, like, either he thinks it's always an acting choice or the way that they write the henchmen is always like, you can always imagine them as being in love with the bad guy.
Oh yeah, for
and
sure.
Like that, this one totally, like for some sure. of them, not as much, but this one he's like, oh, I'll do anything you want. Like, and yeah, Sophie says it's to get in with the popular crowd or like the cool kids, but I don't think he cares. I think he, for some weird reason, imprinted on this man. I was just like, wondering in my head for a second, what would they have been able to make it a thing where they like tried to get him to flip and see how awful I was going to say Shkreli, but no, Cordozar was. But then I was like, no, he's completely brainwashed. He needs to be like deprogrammed, but he's going to go to jail. So
yeah.
So that's not a problem. So anyways, back to this castle. We find out, this is also when Carter tells Brianna that he like has written this algorithm that finds the businesses that are priced low and they can go in and get more, like pay for less than they're worth and stuff like that. So we also find like, oh yeah, he's done all this. And he said that this program found the property that Springer's castle's on, and it was, you know, valued for way under what it should be. So they snapped it up, and he thought that Cordozar would like that it was the castle. And so Brianna's like, oh, does he play? And he's like, not really. He won a tournament in sixth grade. Oh, he got second place.
That's important.
And he says
second.
Yeah, but don't mention that to him. And you're like, oh, of course I'll mention that to him because he's a little butthurt baby.
Still mad about second place in the second grade, fifth grade, whatever, how old, middle school, however old he was.
For a card game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a card game. Yeah. Which is basically Magic the Gathering. Although they mention Magic at the Gathering in it to like make it clear to the audience that's not what it is, but it's it is that kind of game.
Yeah. But also it's basically rock, paper, scissors.
But also rock, paper, scissors.
Which I love. I'm still kind of confused about how you play the game based on what was going on in the tournament and then what they were playing at the end.
Yeah. What
they're playing at the end. Which I do not feel are the same game.
No. Maybe it's two games you can play with the same deck of cards.
Maybe Brianna was just teaching them the baby's version.
Because it looked like that. Like what they were doing at the end was a version of War.
Yeah.
The card game War, not, you know, War.
That's a good War. Yeah, another card game.
So I don't. Anyway, we find out that Brianna recognizes this castle because she has been playing this game since she was a kid, and it's a huge deal to her. And that every year, fans of this game hold a fair on the castle grounds, which is basically a Renaissance festival. So, like, celebrate. Like a whole cosplay LARPing event on the castle grounds. And she has been three times. All of which is very impressive. Like just the idea that she's like, is the castle in Scotland?
No, the castle's like in New Orleans.
Oh, for some reason I thought the castle was like in England somewhere. Like, how did she get there?
Okay, I have a lot going on. I have so many questions about the castle because and just everything in general. It's just one question. But what is the origin of this castle? Because, like, to me, I'd be like, oh, he made up this game, he made a lot of money. He builds a castle, like he bought some land, but no, it says the game was inspired by the castle and the ground. So I'm like, who owned this castle? Why was he there?
I think he was there.
And why is there a castle near near New Orleans? Like,
right, with like huge grounds.
Yeah. 44 acres.
And a lake. And a lake in which there is not a single alligator.
Except there were,
we found out last night when we were watching the live event, that there were several alligators about.
Yeah, I loved Beth's storytelling there where she's like, so a PA comes up and it's like, okay, so there's some wildlife, but don't worry, it's no big deal.
Like, and she's okay. What do you mean, a squirrel? Like,
yeah,
what are you talking about here?
Just don't worry about it. They won't come out of the water. Okay. And then she like goes through like three or four other people. And every time someone comes up, okay, so there's some wildlife. But don't worry about it. It might be a gator, but like 3 or 4 feet. Not bad. And then the next one, it just like gets worse and worse. And then the animal handler at the end is like, all right, so we got some wildlife. It's at least an 8 to 10 footer.
Oh my God.
And then Beth had to lay on the ground and yes, reach up to the branch later. And they had, that's the same water that they used in the Rolling on the River job when they get out of the water after they've stolen all the money from the casino. And she said then the morning after they told them, oh yeah, they like pulled out an 8-foot alligator from near where you were. And they were like, because she and Christian were swimming in the water. And we're like, ah, ha, ha, didn't even think about it. I'm sure this is clean. Don't worry about it. It was not. So that's my big question about this castle. Like, where did it come from?
And where did this castle come from?
Nobody says the name of it except like Springer's Castle. Because I guess he bought it after he made money. I don't know.
I think he grew up there.
What?
He lived there before he made money because he was inspired by it to build the card game.
But how did he come to live in a castle?
And if he has a castle, why doesn't he have enough money to just, I don't know.
Maybe that's why he doesn't like all of the money he's made, because he's already wealthy. Like, he's like old money. And that's why he was a poet and philosopher as his job before he became a card maker.
He did spend a lot of years as just like a wandering hermit, which leads me to believe that he, like Thoreau style, has some money that he's living on.
I guess he has the card game money too.
But apparently the card game money is like.
Oh, that's right. It was like losing money.
It's losing money. The company's losing money. And yet he's just like wandering around. The world. There's family money.
He's a recluse. Yeah, he's got family money. All right. It was his castle all along. We've solved the mystery.
Okay.
So where are we?
We're at the very beginning of this whole
beginning of this con situation.
So Brianna has gone in. She's found out that they own the castle. And she goes back to give them this information, and they decide that they are going to convince him. They're going to, as Steve said, sell him the Brooklyn Bridge, which is like convince him that there's another, I don't even know what con they're running because we don't get to see the end of it. But they're going to convince him that Sophie is another buyer who wants to buy the castle because she is going to buy the rights to the card game and take it apart and sell it for like merchandising and
theme park,
which the Springer has always refused to sell. So she's like, I'm going to get all of this stuff from him. All you have to do is sell me the castle. They set up, I don't know what the end goal of this con is because we never get there.
Yeah. Well, they said like, they're going to sell him the company, but he will actually be buying a worthless company. And by the time he realizes it, all of his assets will
be
gone or something.
To get him to not have any money. So that he cannot keep screwing over children. So he can't keep buying more pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
And hiking up prices.
And price gouging, which is...
Price gouging.
Oh, we cannot skip one of the best scenes where Brianna's like, so Parker steals a painting and she goes to jail. And Parker's like, What? No. And Elliot says, we'd never let that happen. And so he's like, yeah, no.
Obviously, no.
Theoretically, but it would not happen. And she's like, okay, well, that, but he can kill children by a yacht. And so then Harry has to explain, like, yeah, what he's doing is not technically illegal. It's price gouging. So it's immoral, but not illegal.
Well, and then this is, yeah. So, you know, Brianna's kind of continuing throughout this season to have this, like, she knows the world is terrible, but like this reckoning of like how little law enforcement or, you know, the justice system will do versus what people will get away with. I mean, she's a hacker and a Black foster kid, so she's not like super Black naive.
Queer foster kid. Yeah.
Black queer foster kid. She's not like super naive about the system and the ways that it's broken, but she does kind of continue to come up against like terrible things that people are doing and not having any consequences for. So they are going to get Noah Wiley, whose character name I will just never remember. Literally, I'm out of my deathbed.
Our Mr. Wilson. Like,
that dude's name is Noah Wiley.
At least you didn't say Flynn. Like,
sorry, Noah. So Harry, they're going to get Harry to dress up like Springer because no one's seen Springer in years because he's been like, on a, I don't know, commune or something.
Yeah.
Based on what he's wearing when he
right
shows
no
up.
Yeah, he Sophie says unclear. She found him in a Buddhist temple in a remote village in India, and then right. He does come in wearing some very Buddhist looking
right he's clothes. Been like wandering from clothes. Like Buddhist temple to kibbutz to like whatever we'll take
yeah.
him like here's some family money.
Right.
So yeah. So they go to have this meeting with Cordozar with Harry dressed as like
George R. R. Martin.
as George R. R. Martin. Yes, very much specifically as George R. R. Martin. The literal exact definition of like everything George R. R. Martin has ever worn in public. Suspenders, like the whole, the beard.
Yeah, like, fisherman's
hat.
Oh my gosh, he gets really into it. Sophie gives him some pointers. She's like, remember, you're a curmudgeonly self-important artist. And he's like, curmudgeonly self-important artist.
Harry really wants more notes. About
he does. Like, he's just trying to grow his craft.
He wants more notes about his character. Yeah. So as they are walking in to like introduce themselves or to introduce Harry George Springer to Cordozar, the real Elliot, Springer shows up.
Elliot with a Spanish accent.
Yeah. The real Springer shows up. And Harry very quickly goes around a corner.
Yeah, he like you see Elliot like yank him. Elliot yeah. has so many good little beats in this episode.
It's a beautiful little tiny moment in the background. Springer's like, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of owning the company. Like, I'm tired of the whole thing. I'm gonna sell you the whole company.
And he's like, you can see the money symbols like
yeah.
in his eyes,
like going dinging off. Yeah, yeah in his eyes.
And
I just did the like but... money thing with my hand, except this is a podcast, so
not a visual medium.
Not a visual medium. As the brothers McElroy continue to remind one another, podcasting is not a visual medium.
If they haven't figured it out yet, I'm not worried
it's
about
fine.
Them.
Like, they've done 580 episodes of Mabim Bam, and we yeah, have not, so it's fine. Anyway, he looks like a cartoon 91. With money symbols in his eyes. And
but Springer wants to sell his company to a true fan. And yeah. so Cordozar has to prove his pedigree. And he's like, oh, I know how I can prove that I love this. And he pulls out a framed photo of the Queen's Eel card, which is like the unfindable card that there's like a quest and nobody's been able to find it for 20 years. And he like has a picture of it in the vault where he solved the the quest and he found her. And I was like, why doesn't he just have the card in this frame?
This is a really solid question. So before this reveal that Springer really wants someone who's a real fan, because we are watching a video that they took with a camera that they planted of this whole thing. But before that, we see them back at headquarters and they're like, we just handed Cordozar all the business plan and the ammo to buy out 100 more companies and like drive them up and kill more sick kids. And like, we're done. Like, we can't win this con. And Sophie is basically like, this is the situation that drove Nate around the bend. Like, this is what made him an alcoholic. This is how he lost his kid. Like, I can't give up on this one. And it's a very beautiful moment because you can't really have a sick kid desperate dad storyline and not bring up Nate. And so it's just, it's beautiful that Sophie's like, I can't quit on this one. We have to figure out another way to do it. Because it's too personal. And that's when we see the video where he's
like, 'cause Brianna has an idea.
Yeah. Where he's like, I found the card and I have a picture of the card, a framed photo of where I found the card, but not the card itself.
I mean, he does give you a reason. 'Cause like, I was like, why does he do that to Lisa? Yeah. And then it came up, but 'cause he's like, oh, I thought it deserved to be where it had been for so long or something. And there's all these weird boxes behind it, like file boxes. And the clarity of this enhanced photo from his button cam video.
But questionable. It's a button cam. I'm rocking a button.
I mean, I know that technology has come a long way and she is Brianna, but I don't know. But he does say, oh yeah, I'm going to leave it where I found it. And oh, I said that already. They're like, okay, so we just need to find the vault and get the card, and then we can take that and we can prove that we are the better fans. Like, we can screw this deal over, or if he can't find it, yeah, we'll just take the card.
Yeah.
And Parker's clocking everything in this picture to be like, oh yeah, I can find that vault.
Do you know how many vaults I found?
Yes. So many.
Basically.
No problem.
So many. And so they get to the fairgrounds. It's the fair. And they split up. Parker is going with Harry to break into the tiny castle. Wild, but there's a tiny castle. Brianna is going to distract Cordozar. And Sophie and Elliot get to distract Springer and try to keep him away from his meeting. And everything's about to be so amazing.
Sophie and Elliot get to dress up in Renfair costumes. And Sophie's is pretty normal Renfair garb, but Elliot is wearing this mask over his face.
Questionable. The mask has yarn braids coming out the back of it in red and white.
It looks like a cartoon character, and I can't remember which one. Like, I can't, but I look at it and I like can see the cartoon in my mind. Anyway, but like, there's like teeth. Forehead.
Very confusing.
I didn't look at his helmet too much. I was like,
that's all I could focus on.
I just had to like look elsewhere.
Head situation is very confusing.
Yeah,
it's very confusing.
But he's playing Glenn the Savage, so it tracks. And Sophie's cosplaying as Milana, the poetry mistress, and they notice that Springer's like wandering the grounds, but nobody notices him or recognizes him because he's been gone for so long. So she's like, my leash, and they become besties.
Basically,
while Brianna is having this like stare down with Cordozar because she's like looking around for him, and then he like shark creeps up to her from behind, and like they just start this like pissing contest, and it's great because she's just like not afraid of him at all.
Yep.
And she's like, oh yeah, we're here to close the deal and we're going to prove that we're better than you. And he's like, well, I could just get you kicked out because this isn't my property. It was very much like, wait till my dad hears about this.
Very Malfoy. Wait till
my dad hears about this. Yes.
And he's like, I'll get my guy Bolo here to kick you out. His name is Jeffrey, as Carter tells him. And she throws down the gauntlet of like, oh, what if I just go in here and like win this card tournament? And just to get him, because she like brings up, she's like, oh, are you afraid to play me? Are you afraid to get second place? Again.
Cordozar looks like he's gonna murder Carter. Full murder him.
Yep.
For telling him about it. The second, for telling Carter's her like, about second place.
Someone protect.
Yeah. Instead, he is gonna follow. He takes the bait and he's gonna go play this tournament so that he can take down Brianna. But before he goes in the tent, he gives Bolo his job, which is to go take out Sophie, like get her out of there, do whatever is necessary. And I think Carter? That he's like, you have to make sure I win this tournament. Mm-hmm. And they're like, man, you got second place in the fifth grade. You should be pretty good, right?
Nicely.
Right. So Glenn Savage has to joust. And he's very upset because he's like on horses.
No.
And Springer says, no, dragons.
Elliot is wearing an inflatable dragon floaty ring around his waist.
Looking as he already does.
Right, so while wearing like a weird skull helmet and like black leather battle armor.
Oh, so they joust, and I guess Bolo suddenly has men who are in cosplay. He's putting them into the tournament as well. And he's like, take him out. But he jousts with a guy. And he's like, okay, who won? And Float gets deflated.
Yeah.
But he's also upset because the other guy is not also wearing one.
Yeah.
He's like, I thought we were both going to look like idiots. And now I'm disappointed. But yeah, the pool float deflates and just like, falls limply off his body. It is
peak comedy.
It's yes, truly comically brilliant. Yes,
so good. And then they call for round two, and two guys come out with swords.
Yeah,
and apparently they were real. They were blunt edged, but they were not made of aluminum. They were actually made of iron. And
oh boy,
Christian Kane was covered in bruises.
Makes sense.
But I'm sure that's like almost every day of Christian Kane's life. Because of the work he does.
Yeah.
I would definitely be Bruce. And I love that, well, he couldn't really say it because he was in character. So it's very meta. Because he was playing Glenn the Savage, I guess. But these two guys come out and they stand like they're ready to attack. And he like looks down at their feet. And it was a very nonverbal, that's a very distinctive shoe, or that's a very distinctive stance, which is one of Elliot's like callback things that he does. Cause he'll say, oh, that guy was in the Russian Secret Service for 5 years. And they're like, how do you know? And they're like, oh, it was a very distinctive watch that he wears. But yeah, so you could just see him in his head go distinctive, very. And then he like fights two men.
Which Sophie's like, is this part of the thing? And Springer's like, this is new.
I love it. She looks over her shoulder. She sees Bolo, Jeffrey. And she's like, oh no, this has become real. But then she turns to him and she's like, what's going on?
I love how he's like so nonchalant about the like clearly real swords that are out.
Yeah, like the actual fighting. They're in the front row.
Right. He's like, oh, new. Different.
We haven't even talked about the fact that this is French Stewart.
Oh yeah, important caveat, Springer is played by French Stewart. I feel like we should have said that at the very beginning. It is a super key part of the comedy situation.
Now if you haven't seen the episode, which I don't know why, unless you're Lisa, you're listening to this, but I haven't seen the episode. Yeah, if you have that in your head, like, oh, now I really get this guy. Yeah, French Stewart.
I mean, I'm sure that there are a lot of people who could have played that role and done it well, but the combination of French Stewart and that part is like so chef's kiss.
It's beautiful.
Truly, so beautifully cast.
Anyways, he is French Stewart, and he is darling as this man.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that, you know, very old money, eccentric game writer who just flits around the world can be. Let's see. Harry and Parker, meanwhile, have successfully gotten into the castle, but there is no vault. She cannot find it, and she is a little frustrated, and Brianna tells him, like, yeah, this is the quest. Like, you have to figure out the clues to figure out where it is. And
Brianna had tried to give Parker her notebook of, like, all of the times she had already tried to solve this and all of the clues she'd already gotten through. And Parker was like, no, I've got this. Like, I'm a vault expert. You go do your part. I'll do my part.
And she looks so sad.
I know. Brianna's like, 20, like, for 20 years, people have been trying to solve this puzzle and they haven't yet. So, like, maybe listen to the clues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That might help. But Parker's like, nope. That's fine. Oh, back to Elliot. Because this part does jump back and forth between the joust and the finding the clues and stuff. When he wins, because, spoiler guys, he wins that fight with two guys with swords. He even, like, threw the sword off. Like, he's like, I don't need this. I have a shield and my gauntlets that you're gonna like hit with a sword. Oh my gosh. But when he wins, he like takes off his helmet, or he twirls the sword, puts it into the ground. He's taken off his helmet at this point, and he does the hair flip, and there's like the sun is like shining through the trees right behind him.
Majestic.
Absolutely majestic. I guess just a real specimen. Just so good. I like, so Brianna's playing this tournament with the cards, but she just keeps talking to herself.
Yeah.
She's getting like monologues in her
ear mic.
And the other players don't react.
Total 0% reaction, which is either a plot hole or says something about the kind of people who play this game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not reacting at all. She's talking in her mic and trying to talk them through how to get to this, how to find this vault.
Yeah, and she realizes, she's like, and it's fun because it's just happenstance, because she turns over a card and it triggers something, and it's like the pond is smaller than the lake in the game, so it's supposed to, and that like fits in with like where imagination doesn't go or something. And so she like figures out this first step, and they're like, okay, well, that doesn't, it's okay, that narrows it down a little, thank you. And Parker doesn't like acknowledge, because Brianna even says like, see, knowing the game helps, and Parker doesn't really say, oh, you're right. And when they get off that call, Harry has her take her earpiece out, and then he gives her a little pep talk about, you know, being a good mentor. He's like, you don't have to know everything. You don't have to be right all the time. You have to have a relationship. And like, she was opening up to you. She's trying to share with you. And she's like, okay, how do you know all this? And he says, I'm a dad.
It's very sweet. Although, And I mean, spoiler, we saw like the first half of the next episode on the event last night. And there is a scene where he's like trying to make plans with his daughter and she's not super interested. And he's like, that's what happens when you work your whole life. I do feel like Harry was probably not a good dad at all for like the majority of his children's lives. But he does care about them.
Mm-hmm.
He would like to be a better dad. They're just adults now and they don't care about him.
I think it's, he's only mentioned a daughter.
One. Okay.
Okay. And we also know from last night that the daughter does make an appearance and I believe she will be played by his actual daughter.
Yes, so she did cool. audition for the part.
She auditioned. That's right. He didn't outright say,
that she got it, but that she
auditioned. He's like, I can get you an audition, but I can't hire you. And then I think she auditioned for Dean and then he emailed him and was like, oh, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I assume that she got the part.
And his wife also has a part in it, I think. But I don't know who Noah Wiley's married to.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah. Because it is, everybody has been on this show, everybody's family. Because they talked about that a lot. Like, it really was, and Dean Devlin's, like, cinematic empire, he does work with the same people over and over again. Like, they still have, like, the same cameraman, the same wardrobe person. Like, tons of people came back from the previous series. But, like, people's kids have been in it. Like, Beth's son was, I think she said he was in it. He was always backstage and, like, learning stuff. And now he's also a director. And Gina Bellman's daughter was in an episode. Alice Hodge's brother was, like, a main... like the victim in an episode.
Apparently he's married to Sarah Wells, who was on Californication and Nip Tuck.
Shows like had no interest in watching, even for Dan Kim.
But there we go.
All right. Very cool. So she'll be in the second half of the season, everybody. Let's see. So back in the tent, Brianna has defeated everybody but Cordozar, and they're just having like a little pregame chat. They're just chirping each other. And by chirping each other, I mean, he is giving her his evil speech of evil about if you want to win, you have to not care about anybody, not have, it was just awful. And he's like, you have to be a killer.
Yeah.
And she's just not even making eye contact because this guy is creepy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But when he says you have to be a killer, like that, obviously, I love when they have too many emotions and they break character. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, like you are a killer of children because they don't have medicine. He's like,
evil face.
Yeah.
So he cannot win this game by himself, or he doesn't think he, I mean, I'm sure he can't because Brianna's like just one against one while paying zero attention, one while having an entire very extended conversation with people in here, has just like handily beat everybody else in the tent.
And she even apparently let the last one go three extra hands.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's because she's spinning out the time, distracting mm-hmm. him.
So Cordozar has glasses that have like a camera in them and an earpiece, and Carter is feeding him what moves to do next based on an algorithm. So Carter is not even good at this game.
Yeah.
It's not like Carter is like a wizard at this game. He is just programming an algorithm that will tell him what card should be played next or what card is likely to come up next.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting. Like they could have made him a big fanboy and like, that's why he brought the property to Cordozar to begin with. And like, oh yeah, I know this game, but he's like, I don't know, but this, my, you know, program knows everything about this game.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have, they could have leaned into the nerd,
like, yeah, well,
stereotype, but they didn't.
When he first meets Brianna, he tells her that he wrote this algorithm, and she gets really excited about it, and they have this moment of, like, super nerd math.
Yeah, together. Right.
And the team has to be like, Brianna, come back to the con, because you are, like, having a full nerd spiral here. And that's really something they could have leaned into, like, and it could have gone into the, like, can we turn this guy? Like, can we nerd him out of the dark side? But no. Simply likes to build algorithms for the evilest.
Evilest.
I just don't get them. And, yeah, so she realizes when they first start playing that he is cheating. And he's, like, fidgeting with the glasses nonstop.
He's not good.
And she's like, hang on, I gotta call my mom. Just randomly. And she, like, pulls away. She pulls up his Wi-Fi network and gets somehow into seeing some other, the camera view that Carter is seeing to help him cheat. And she's like, I knew it, he's cheating. There was no way he could have gotten this far. And Parker and Harry, like, hear that he's cheating and that he's got this video. She's like, they ask, could you get into that program to use the algorithm so that we can find the vault? And she's like, I always want her to say, well, I want to win fair and square. Like, you know, I don't want to use this to cheat the way that he's using it to cheat. But she's like, no, I could. It would just take time. And I don't have that time.
Right. Yeah, I don't have time. I definitely could.
That's right. We're bad guys.
She does not care about winning fair and square. No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And it would take too long. And Parker is like, okay, well, thank you anyway. And good job with the idea. So, yeah. And Harry's just like, thumbs up, like, you got this, you're doing so good.
Have y'all seen Mitchells versus the Machines?
No. Yes.
So first of all, you should watch Mitchells versus the Machines because it's hysterical. It's maybe funnier if you live with a five-year-old. I do. But it's very good. And there is a part where the teenage daughter, so they're on a road trip, like the teenage daughter and the younger son who's coded as autistic, although they don't say that in the movie.
So is the girl.
She is. Yeah, it's true. They both are. And they're like the two, the brother and the older sister kind of like help each other try to do family relationships a little bit better. And the daughter is having a hard time with her dad. And they like cannot communicate with each other. And so the brother is in the backseat holding up signs of like things to say in response to dad to not start another fight. He's like scribbling on like they're in the middle of a robot apocalypse.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Part of this. There's a robot apocalypse happening and they're like, he's got like a Sharpie and like a piece of cardboard and he's like scribbling notes for her to like say to dad to not start another fight. And it is very much Harry here. Yes. You can be supportive, Parker. I believe in you.
But it does help.
The movie is great. Just excellent. What is it?
Mitchells versus the Machine.
Okay.
It's on Netflix. Cute family dynamics. The main character, the girl, is canonically queer. The mom is like a super badass because she used to be a first grade teacher. she just and they're the only family on Earth that is like able to save the world from the robot apocalypse, but they're also very, very bad at everything.
Yes.
And they have a pug. And it is very cute. And it confuses the robots because they can't tell if it's a dog or a pig or a loaf of bread.
I feel like a lot of this have that problem with bugs.
It's anyway, it's really cute. But also, it reminded me of this episode of like, you're doing good. Just keep saying that. It's going to make this relationship better.
Absolutely.
It's very good. It's very good.
Okay, so while Parker's being supportive, they're trying to keep distracting Springer. And he's like, oh, I got to go to this business meeting. It's been so fun hanging out with you two fans. And because she's at this point, I think the first time I watched it, I assumed that she was playing her character and was like actually talking business to him. But mm-hmm. that's not the con anymore. She's literally just playing a fan who's like, I'm going to make you hang out with me because I want to.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I realized that this time I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. Because they wouldn't have had time to talk about everything. But she's like, no, the poetry recital is happening and I'm up next. And he's like, oh, well, I do love poetry, but I really got to go. And Brianna says to tell him that you're reciting one of his sonnets, and she names a sonnet. I can't think of, it's like Meadows Breeze or something.
Yeah.
And it works. She's like, I'm reading one of your sonnets, and it would mean so much to me if you stayed and listened. And he's like, oh, okay. And Elliot's like, in the background, Christian Kane's acting right here. I love it so much. He's just like, no, what?
Do not know. No.
And even like, they start walking towards the stage and he's like, it was the most like natural, like brother sisterly thing where he's like, yeah. No. And she just like flails her arms away. Like, she's like, get away. Oh.
Play fighting.
It was so good. And I think that's just, people have known each other for as long as they have. Like, mm-hmm. they're, since they're like a family, just very like sibling-esque. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was right to be worried because she's really, really bad because she's Sophie acting. She's
very bad.
It's painful.
But as she says a line about the lake, Brianna has this inspiration. She's like, oh, this is connected to the clue. And she's like, okay, so the, you know, the play's the thing, but the sonnet's the thing wherein we'll find a vault with a playing card in it. And as soon as Sophie realizes that this is part of the con, she becomes like the best Shakespearean actress that she is.
Amazing.
And just
she's like on the floor.
Yeah.
A small stream.
Like, she's like the
waves with her hand. And he's like giving her stage direction from the audience. He's like, and Elliot's just drinking mead
and like staring just blankly. Like,
oh my God, why? Yeah, so while she's reciting this and she says like the breeze and they like just had like a little wind go across her face and her hair lifted is perfect. They find a squid tree and I hadn't noticed the first couple times, but during the joust we had to pause for a second and there are like squids in the like the pennant kind of banners in the joust, like that, as if that's a coat of arms. So they have to find a squid tree, which this was another question I had. It has eight legs, eight branches. Trees change over time.
They do, especially because it's been more than 20 years. We know because we keep being reminded since that.
And yeah, and we've had a lot of hurricanes in the last 20 years. A lot of
hurricanes in the Gulf Coast.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But Parker does find the correct of the eight limbs and she's like laying underneath it. Oh,
it's a baby.
Oh,
a fur baby.
And this is the nice cat.
Oh. with those
this
ears.
Is my non-evil cat, who is currently very mad at me because yes. I picked her up and made her dance. Like, but she's still not as mad at me as my regular cat is all the time.
Spike's just perma-mad. Yeah. But she was laying on you yesterday, you said?
She was cold, so she was deigning to lay on my legs and a part of me where I could not pet her.
Wow.
She can touch me, but I can't touch her. That's how that goes.
So the boundaries were set.
That's what our boundaries are.
So Parker finds the right limb. Is unaware that there are large alligators to her right or left. And she twists the branch. I don't know how she knows which way, but I think at that point I was just like, she's Parker and she can get in the vaults. Yeah. And I was like,
she stopped listening.
She's got this from here.
Yeah.
And it opens a hole in the ground. There's a ladder. Harry takes the ladder. Parker just jumps
again. Hurricanes flooding.
It's right next to a pond.
Right.
It is.
I have some.
Right next to a pond already.
I have only lived in the Gulf Coast for 7 years, but I have some questions about the feasibility of this choice.
Look, guys, I don't know if you know this about New Orleans, but they cannot bury their dead because they rise back up.
Accurate. Mm-hmm.
So an underground vault is not feasible.
It's not a great idea.
But anyways, it's a fantasy. So this is more of a black, no, this is more of a ledger, not black box. Sorry, everyone. But they find the vault. The door's not even locked because, I mean, nobody's been able to find it for 20 years. It's pretty, you know, secure.
Yeah.
But the Queen's Eel card is not in the vault, which is not good. And back in the tent, Brianna like puts a card down that Cordozar didn't think that she should have had, and he like gets really irate and he's like, oh, you're cheating. And she's like, how could I be cheating? And he's like, you looked at the reflection in my glasses.
No, he says you looked through my glasses, and she's like, how would I have done that unless there was a camera in them? Oh. Like, he straight up admits that she has hacked into the camera in his glasses.
Oh, I took that. I thought I heard him say, like, off the reflection of my glasses.
I'm but pretty sure he like straight up admits.
Because she says, well, how would you know that unless you were cheating?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot. Yours makes a lot more sense.
I'm pretty sure that's what, like, he was just straight up like, I'm cheating. And oh, now wait, you I cheated have, my cheating.
I have the transcript. Hang on.
Okay.
Oh. Let's see. Oh yeah. So when they find that it's empty, they realize he must have it on him. And he also said earlier that if he can win the tournament, he'll impress Springer so much that he won't have to walk him through the quest, because he has to walk him through how he found the Queen's Eel card. Right. He's like, oh, I'll just impress him by winning this and I won't have to do the thing that I can't do because they use the algorithm to find the card to begin with. Though I don't know why, once you know where it is, you can't like work it back through the clues.
But he doesn't want to do that work.
That's no, true.
It's too much effort.
And I guess Carter really is not that into the game, because if I was him, I'd be like, all right, let's reverse engineer it now. Anyways, so, okay, he says, there's no way you could have known there's no way you could have known that I was going to put this card down. And she's like, oh, I didn't know that. I just played this card. And that's when he gets upset. You cheated. You looked through my glasses at my cards. Okay. Okay, so he does. Like, he just comes
right out. He straight up admits that there's, yeah, and she's like, that, how would I do that unless there was a camera in your glasses?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so he's like, fine. So they're about to start their final round. And Bolo has finally succeeded in whisking Springer away as Sophie gets her standing ovation. And Elliot's super impressed. So they're running out of time because Bolo is bringing him back. And so that's it. Like, he's going to get the card from Cordozar. I cannot remember this man's name. I keep wanting to just call him Shkreli, Martin Shkreli, which is the worst name. And so he's going to give him the card and it's all going to be over. But we have Parker and Harry who are like, wait, hold on a second. We may have found something. And that's very good. So Springer comes in and Cordozar calls time out so he can go finish this deal. And, you know, Springer's like, oh, I got here at the perfect time. It's the championship round. And I see that you're there. So you really are a fan. And he's like, oh, yeah. If I weren't a serious fan, could I have found this? And he like pulls out the card, which is like really nicely holographic. I was like, it is the one of a kind card. So even if it wasn't holographic, it would go for a lot on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
But being holographic is so much better. And Sophie comes running in after with Elliot, and he's like, see, you're too late. I won the company. And let's see. Oh, and she's like, and how exactly are you going to pay for that? And Harry shows up and he's like, because you don't have any assets because the FDA is about to freeze all of them. Because what he did was he hid all the printed out files proving, you know, the work that they'd done to find these companies and buy them out and jack the prices. All of those files were in the vault.
Those
boxes.
He proved including proof that he had the cure, had found the cure for this rare disease and was hiding it. And the reason that matters is that he took a bunch of funds from the government
for
research to find this cure that he already had, which is fraud. So he defrauded the government of a bunch of money. So he is in a lot of trouble and not going to have any money. Also, my laptop's about to die and I cannot find my charging cable. So
Suddenly
he sees existing is because of my laptop died.
Okay. All right. But he's like, that doesn't matter because this guy doesn't want money. Again, he must be rich. Because he's just like, oh, you're just going to hand this over to me and I won't have to pay anything. And I was like, what? That's not how that works, man. What's wrong with you? But he's like, you're a man of your word.
This is a questionable retirement plan.
Yeah.
Family money.
Exactly. And all right, where are we? There's like a little flashback to how Parker knew what was going to be in that vault. Or no, what Sophie knew was going to be in that vault. And Harry's like, how do you do this? And she's like, it's a gift. So, you know, he's like, I don't need any money. I have the Queen's Eel card. And then he reminds him, you said a man is only as good as his word. And that if I gave you this card, the company's mine. And Springer is just going to roll over and be like, well, I guess I have to be a man of my word, even though I've just heard about horrible things that you have done.
Also, even though you didn't do what you said you were going to do and lead me through the clues, you just showed up with the card, which is the opposite of keeping your word.
Which also we didn't shake on it, which he was like hell bent on, like, that's how he
deals. Yeah, he never actually shook his hand. Yeah.
The ending of this is, I mean, it's set up so that Brianna gets to give this like beautiful big speech, but it also just doesn't really make sense. Like, there is no reason for Springer to go through with this, except that he's kind of a doofus.
Yeah. Like, it's all about the honor. And I'm like, you've just heard that this man is withholding a cure to something that's
like literally murdering children, and you are your honor bound to give him more money to murder children. Like, something is not, the math is not mathing on this one. So
no. Where's Carter? Get him on this.
He is rich. He has never had to do math. It's a banana, Michael. How much could it cost? $30? Like, with inflation is 30 now, but yeah, but it does set up nicely this speech that Brianna gives about the promise that he made to them when he created this game that made people who think differently and talk differently and love differently, like her, you know, a place that they didn't feel as like an outsider where they belonged. And he does a real good bait and switch there where he's like, oh, no, no, wait, before I get to that, her last line from that is, she says, like we belong, like we could belong, like we do belong, we belong in myth. And I was like, oh, that's just such a good line. We belong in myth.
Love it.
And he says, I'm sorry to her. And friggin' Cordozar. It's the worst name.
Cordozar. Not good. Your face makes like every, but like in order to say that word, your face has to make the weirdest. Cordozar.
There's no.
You're trying to get your mouth around a marshmallow and you can't get your teeth unstuck.
Yes.
Cordozar.
Your jaw won't snap back to sleep. Yeah. Cordozar. Yeah. And then you're like.
The Texan comes out.
It jumps right out. I'm first generation. I don't understand how that's possible, but
I'm not even from Texas.
I know.
I am not from the South. It's bad. Anyway, Cordozar is looking very smug. Yeah, mm-hmm. With smug face McSmuggertons over there.
Mm-hmm. But Springer follows that up quickly with, I can't sell you my company. And he's like, but I thought you were a man of my word. And then he goes, I guess I'm not that good. We're like, no, you're rich white man.
Yeah.
But, oh, I think we lost Corey.
Oh, no.
Oh, there you are. Oh, okay.
He just broke.
I know.
And then it just like fades away and it comes back to the Leverage HQ, and the dad is there filling them in, and he says the doctors say that she's responding well and that she's going to be free of this in a few weeks, and
wild.
It's just so good. And he's like, how did you get them to also pay for all the medical bills? And they're like, well, they were just happy that they, you know, weren't getting in trouble. And you know, he says the classic line of, I don't know how I could ever repay you. And Sophie's, I like, she's like, she's toying with her wedding ring. And she said, you know, knowing that other kids aren't going to be in danger because of this, that's like all the payment that we need. And then she like looks down at her, realizes that she's worrying at the ring. And she's like, well, that I needed. And it's so cute. And then she's like standing perpendicular to Noah Wiley, but like up against him. They're very close.
Yeah, very close. They're very close in that scene. I was like,
right? What you doing?
Huh? What's going on here? What's happening? This is some personal bubble invasion happening right now.
Yeah. And then she like leans into him to like kind of like push off from him as she like does a cheeky smile and walks away. So that also, I was just like, what? But then it quickly goes into a little like credit scene where they're all sitting around and they're playing the game, the Spirits Ruse.
Except they're playing a completely different version of it. Totally unrelated to the one that was in the tournament.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's all right. Because we have a couple little Easter eggs there. Parker throws some pretzels at Harry, which pretzels are the code word for emotions that Parker has. Like her and Elliot, or her and Hardison.
Cute.
And I don't know, that was the only one. Oh, at the very end, what Elliot's saying, like, is it? It's their turn, it's his turn, and he's like, I've already lost like 6 cool points just by hanging with you guys tonight. And I'm like, Elliot, you have a book club with an old security officer, security guard. Like, don't act like you're cool, man. It's true.
So for some reason, I don't know if I just didn't hear it the first time I watched this episode, but this, when I was rewatching it last night, like, I got distracted by something. So I was listening to that line read, and I thought it was Harry who said it. And I was like, Harry, you're a space lawyer. You're 0% cool.
Yeah.
Like, it also does not make sense for Elliot to have said it, because no one on the leverage team is cool except Hardison.
Yeah.
Accurate.
Yeah.
So
I think Sophie's very cool.
Okay. None of the dudes on the leverage
team. Right. I was like,
are cool.
But not as in like hip, you know,
cool.
True. Yeah. But like she's cool. But yeah, nobody else.
So I was like, who, what? Cool points. Anyway, no, nobody lost any cool points in this game. None were lost. I do want to say that I loved that in the live event last night, they were talking about Brianna doing her first audition. And so the last time I was on the podcast, we did the Rolling on the River job, and we talked a great deal about the scene where Brianna tries to pick the bells off of Parker's sweater, but she's wearing like 300 bells on her sweater. And also she has coated it in a numbing cream. Like, that's the scene that they had
the screen test for.
Her screen test with, but like in her house, because it was Zoom, you know.
Because it was COVID.
Wow.
And like with her mom on the other side of the wall, and just she's having to like fall out of frame and like pretend that she's been drugged. And that's
amazing.
Hysterical to me. Just perfect.
It's such really a good. Vision. And how she like talked about her mom, she was like, just like, she'd warned her before the audition or the screen test, but okay, I'm gonna be falling down, but I'm totally okay. It's for the bit. Like, don't come running in. And I like that she said my mom worked from home. She worked for the government. And I was like, why did you have to tell us that she worked for the government? And now I need to know what your mom does. Exactly. Please tell me. But yeah, she kept like knocking this clock, and then she was like, my mom was gonna come in and I was gonna be in trouble
for breaking her clock.
So cute. I know she's not breaking my clock. What were other trying to think of some other good things that weren't super spoilery. Well, it's spoilery, but it's an Easter egg. So did you notice in the clip from the first episode, they show LeVar Burton like reading a book? Well, he was reading several books sitting at the circulation desk, but I think it's when Elliot comes over and has the conversation with him. Did you see who the author of that book was?
No.
It was,
I was watching it on my phone.
And it was no. I was like projecting it on my TV. It was Detective Bonanno. I was like, what? And I tweeted several things while I was watching, and Dean Devlin liked it. So I think I caught it. Dean Devlin liked some of my tweets last night. It was very exciting.
Yes. So the first episode, which is airing on Friday, up against the season finale of Ted Lasso. Thanks, internet. Does star LeVar Burton. I just want people to go watch LeVar Burton be on Leverage.
Yes. I definitely cried just watching the first 10 minutes. So I'm all in. Nothing has been more right in this universe than having LeVar Burton play a librarian.
Except unless there is a moment where they do very bad library work that no one would never happen in a library that we can talk about when we talk about the episode.
Yes.
But I was like, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This violates several library policies.
Yeah.
sure other people feel where they watch Leverage all the time when their professions are important.
Yes, we haven't really had that the chance to nitpick that. So I'm excited to talk about this library and what's going on at it.
Yes, you all should watch the episode. I mean, I don't know why you would listen to a Leverage-based podcast if you were not already going to watch every episode of Leverage Redemption. But like,
Lisa just likes to listen to me talk. So, I mean, my mom also does that. So
I've been listening to podcasts about things I know just a tiny bit about.
That's fair. I did find out that several people in the Discord that I'm in, which is a Discord run by the authors who are Kit Rocha, but it's just like readers and book related Discord are big fans of this podcast. Like, shout out to the Broken Circle listeners.
What?
yeah they're like, there's a Leverage channel and they're like, oh yeah, we listen to Let's Go Steal a Podcast. And I was like, sometimes I'm on Let's Go Steal a Podcast.
Wow,
so that's neat.
That's awesome. Well, hi everybody, thanks for listening.
Shout out Broken Circle. There's a bunch of stuff on the live event that was really cute and adorable, and mostly just them being really genuinely liking one another, which was very sweet to watch.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts was so Beth Rieschkopf directed a couple episodes this season. That's her first directing of a TV show, and you know, they asked her some questions about that, and she was really humble and like, well, like, everybody's just so good at their job, really I didn't have a lot to do. And like, she finished doing that, and then Gina Bevelin was like, no please. Like, and she like just like made her, you know, own up to how much work that she did and how hard she worked and everything. And I was like, yes, all the support, all the friends, like, I love it. That was really sweet. They didn't say anything about a season two, but they are like, we'd love to come back. So when you watch the second half, please flood the internet. So oh, there's a little Leverage stuff out there during the noise of Ted Lasso, but
we would love to have them come back at a time when Aldous Hodge is less busy and can be in more episodes, because we miss Hardison very, very much.
So yeah, so we need to make sure this show comes back. So everybody watch it a million times, talk about it everywhere. Do that. Get those algorithms going. What else? Oh, they had really cute little blooper reel. And it was mostly Noah Wiley forgetting to take his mask off. Like, he could go to start filming and he'd still have a mask on. And I love that, because that's all I've got. I think I did find a high slight, and it was about, it was just this one specific gaming store got broken into 3 times, and they were just there to steal Magic the Gathering cards, which they're expensive.
No, it's true.
But like, you need to do 3 properties to get all of them. I didn't read more. You guys can read more. I'll put the link in the description.
So Robin was going to come and record with us, but then she got busy with work and ditched us.
Also, she's an hour ahead of us, and it's true.
It's
here.
Very late. For which we will probably forgive her, because she's our favorite person. Mm-hmm. But she did send us a link to a heist. And it is a Renaissance Festival wench takes down sword thief, puts him in a headlock.
What?
A man crashed a jousting performance at the Colorado Renaissance Festival, now faces theft and attempted assault charges. He tried to steal a sword during the middle of the joust at a Renaissance Festival in Larkspur, Colorado. He was tackled by a fair employee. So he, let's see. So the knights, he was not tackled by one of the knights. He was tackled by like one of the damsels, like one of the fair damsels. and who is married to one of the knights, the jousting knights. And she was basically like, that sword is $400. You can't have it.
Yep. Do you know how much money I make? Not
we're not, there's not, my family cannot afford another sword. It's not happening. So there's a picture and she's like in a corset and like got the dude in a headlock.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing. Says,
police believe Ward may have been intoxicated. Do you think? Anyway, thanks, Robin, for sharing that beautiful heist light with us.
I love it.
As she, I'm sure, knew, her best friend had neglected to come up with one. Yeah. So,
sorry. Well, I knew we were going to talk about the live event. So,
I'm taking personal credit for that, Bob, because you're not here to stop me.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up. Any more ideas? Any more thoughts? Lisa, I invited you on this podcast last minute. Did you come up with a heist slate?
I sure did not.
All right, that's okay. You're not alone. I didn't even read the full article of
mine. I love reading a headline.
It's been 18 months, y'all. Sometimes I can't get that far into an article.
So true.
No.
Sometimes I just read the screenshots other people post on Twitter.
True.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Let's do where we can be followed. Corey, tell me where.
On Instagram or Twitter at Helen's Twin, HelensTwin. I never post on either of them. It will be very boring.
But you can scroll back and like something accidentally. And then be racked with anxiety.
Yay.
Oh god, they saw that. I don't know.
I have good old content, but I no longer upkeep either of those accounts.
All right. Oh, I just got a little email from Patreon Rebecca Mock, who I don't know if I've talked about Rebecca Mock out loud in the podcast. I always thank them in the show notes. Is an illustrator artist who I follow and really like, and in 2017, they tweeted something about, if I had a leverage podcast, it would just be hours of me crying about found families. And I was like, oh, that'd be great. I like responded to them and said, oh, that'd be great. I'd love to be on and talk about all the Doctor Who references. And they liked it. And like, that was it. But then I could not stop thinking about a leverage podcast. And so Rebecca Mock inspired this podcast. You should yes. go follow them. And you should subscribe to their Patreon, like I do. So, Lisa, do you want to be found anywhere on the internet, or do you wish to not be perceived?
I do not wish to be perceived.
Excellent. You can find me on Twitter at LibrarianSteve. That's Librarian.
You should follow Steve.
You should.
Yeah.
I'm delightful. I took pictures of vegetables tonight and posted them.
Steve's the next person to follow on Twitter. I know this is how we became friends, because I followed her on Twitter and like creeper, I saw her in real life and was like, I know you. And she was like, no.
It's true.
But I do now.
Yes. Yes. One time I was with friends that
sometimes I see beautiful women in public and just befriend them.
What else are you gonna do?
Yeah. You're married.
Like my sapphic magnetism. So I have zero sapphic magnetism, but if I did, I would use it to befriend beautiful women who I've been following on Twitter.
See, that is the way to use your powers for good. Yes. Please come follow. I tweet about leverage. I tweet about
everything.
I tweet about not being able to find the right kinds of books. And pictures of vegetables, apparently. And I think that's it. We'll be back I messed up my little thing. You won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks. We're gonna be talking, I totally forgot what the name of the next episode is and who is gonna be on it. Wow. Let me check real quick.
It'll be a surprise.
I can tell you guys. It is the double-edged sword job, and Sally's coming back. She's been poorly. I hope she gets better. But probably before that, I will have watched the 8 episodes of the second half of the season, and I will be most likely recording my just like immediate reactions after I watch the episodes, and I'll try to post those. Yeah. All right. Thanks for being on, everybody.
This is a lovely Wednesday night. It was fun.